Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shamba, welcoming you to the July 9th, 2024 edition of Ask a Leader. Today, my guest for the full hour will be Paige Barrows, a fully immersed volunteer bringing humanitarian aid to Ukraine. It's already clear that we'll entitle this episode, Moms for Ukrainian Liberty. It's very necessary to reappropriate some movement politics language right now. That's my idea. You know what I'm doing, everybody. Paige Barrows' commitment to Ukraine stems from her service as a Peace Corps worker there in 2010 to 2012. She will talk about her activities, both stateside as well as in Ukraine, since the full invasion by Russia in 2022. Her latest trip was Bucha, Irpin, and multiple locations along the front line in April of 2024. That's just like 2 months ago. She is the first non-Ukrainian to speak about this war on our show. She is going to demonstrate what it's like to lead by example. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, and a shout out to anybody from those Ukraine Twitter spaces that are listening. I've learned so much from the veterans, logistics, all the workers that have been gathering in those spaces, and that is how I was able to be introduced to our guest today. For the full hour is Paige Barrows. She served as a Peace Corps worker in Ukraine from 2010 to 2012. She's raised over, and this could be, you know, she could break the new amount, but I have her at $145,000 humanitarian dollars. Networks stateside, bringing along service members to stateside civilians for a better understanding of how to end this invasion is how Paige rolls. I first heard her in Twitter spaces on Ukraine in about 2022. I don't remember what month, because there are so many amazing people that taught me what I know, and they've taught me so much that I can see something before it's framed in a sort of checkered media coverage. We began planning her appearance in late May, and now we have her with us today amidst the horrific waves of attacks in Ukraine, and just as the NATO summit begins in Washington, D.C. Paige's daily job, she is a business analyst at Pearson Wireless, a logistics and specialist projects at MGM Marketing previous to that, and property manager before that. Paige completed her Bachelor's of Arts in Psychology Sociology at Kansas State University. We do this, Paige, for our college radio listeners. Everybody has a different higher ed arc, and it's great to bring that. So with critical insight and even some suggestions for how we can exert some impact in these latest developments, she comes to us live today from the Kansas City area suburb Olathe.
Olathe,
Kansas, dropping an advisory that radio limits one's vocabulary, the kind one uses when war rages on. Just dropping that. So welcome to Ask a Leader, Paige Barrows.
Thank you. That was quite an introduction. I appreciate that.
Well, we're dealing with the personal to the geopolitical. We got to try to cover it all. So I was ready to breathe a collective sigh of relief that the United Kingdom and the French elections help keep NATO unity intact. But I'm not sure we'll think about that while we talk about your ventures. But the Russian terrorism attacking the Kyiv's children's cancer hospital and the Dnipro attacks, I don't know if you feel like it's actually a real fractured alliance in both the UK and France. So I don't know if the far right movements tamped down, if that's sort of something that gives you something you can work with, or it's more of the same.
Honestly, I don't. I every time I try to speculate what will happen or the outcome of things, it seems like something insanely different happens. So it's hard to know. I'm really crossing my fingers at this summit. We see some positive, and by positive, I don't just mean promises and words, but you know, more importantly, what actually happens afterward. But I'm also not going to hold my breath because, you know, we meaning Ukraine supporters and Ukrainians have been let down quite a bit. So I don't want to get my hopes up. I'm just kind of focused on what I can control, at least for the time being. But
we'll talk about that, the fits and starts. So first, let's really, the better start here is to talk about the Ukraine you lived in as a Peace Corps worker. And it was just, you know, a couple of years ahead of the Maidan Revolution. It was very successful in democratizing Ukraine. How were you assigned there and the process of your getting to know and really fall hard for this country, the history that you learned anew?
I like that, falling hard. I did fall hard for Ukraine. I got to remember that for Twitter.
Right.
At the time, when I started applying when I was at Kansas State, and the application process, it was the Peace Corps was really competitive at the time, and it took me about a year from the start, from applying to the interviews and medical clearance and all that. And you could share your preference on where you wanted to go, but I don't think it really mattered. So basically, depending on your person, your experience, your education, your work, your volunteer experience, you'd be nominated for a certain region. So I was nominated for Eastern Europe. And then the Peace Corps program in Ukraine at that time was actually the largest Peace Corps program in the largest country in the world. There were a little over, I believe, 400 volunteers there at the time. So I was nominated for Eastern Europe and then selected for Ukraine. And I found out I was going to Ukraine at exactly 1 month before I left. And so that, as you can imagine, kind of surreal. I was sitting on the floor in my college apartment as I was moving out and opened that big envelope and was like, congratulations, you'll be going to Ukraine. And I was like, cool. And then I kind of went, oh, my God, I'm moving to Ukraine. So it was kind of crazy. But yeah, so then I a month later, I was on a plane, headed over and lived there for 27 months.
And you're gradually, because you're there, and again, it's a breakaway republic and Independence Day is around the corner. It's just next month that they'll be celebrating Independence Day. And it was 1991, mm-hmm. correct?
Correct.
Okay, so, and I do bring that up especially when I hear Russian spoken around the community, I say, isn't this a great day? Isn't this Independence Day a good thing? So, we've got those stories to swap at the end here. But, so, yeah. You were learning gradually a whole lot of Ukrainian history that some of us are just getting since the full invasion of February 2022. But, so just briefly, and I know that's unfair to hit you with that, that assignment to do it briefly, but you knew I wanted to ask. So you're gradually understanding, oh, so these are Ukrainian people. This is a Ukrainian culture. This is a Ukrainian history.
Yeah, it's definitely different learning about a country when you're living it, I guess. Because a lot of it I was learning just by, I wasn't aware, you know, you just kind of, I would go on like day trips with some friends and or neighbor, you know, counterparts, to different areas and, you know, went to the resting place in this museum for one of their, Taras Shevchenko, who is like this really well-known, he did everything, writer, artist, you'll hear Shevchenko is a really common,
yes,
common last name. A lot of things are named after him there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, went to places like that. So just by experiencing it, I was learning a lot. The historical side, I was learning a lot about. The political side was still a little bit, I'll say, chaotic at the time. They did celebrate 20 years of independence while I was there. But I'm blanking out on his name right now. I want to say Yukashenko. But I was the president. Yukashenko.
Yanukovych. No.
Yanukovych. Thank you. Lukashenko. Why Lukashenko? Yeah, did you hear him? I mixed him up.
Well, no, there's
Lukashenko. And there's so many
Well, it's
names.
Because Paige doesn't sleep, folks. She was tweeting at like in the middle of the night last night with the latest rallying for hospital aid. So there's a lot of names, and she's been working with current names, and I'm making her dust Dawson. But Yanukovych, yes. So you are learning this.
So he was the president, and he was corrupt. He was very corrupt, and they chased him out while he flew. He ran away during the revolution, or just before maybe. But so there was still a lot of kind of inner turmoil. Nothing, you know, not anything. Just kind of, I didn't know too much about it, like politically, but I could, from what I was understanding, I could tell that this was. Something wasn't quite, you know, turmoil, I guess, is the best way I can say it. So I came back. When I moved home, it was the end of 2012, and then the revolution started technically like December of 2013, I think, is when really stuff started kicking off. So I did watch that from home, and that was really difficult to see, but just because it was scary. Of course, there was a lot of good that did come of it eventually, as far as him getting out of there, and the police force was completely redone, basically. So there was a lot of good that did come out of it for the country overall. But, yeah, so I kind of just learned that by, you know, there was a time where I would go every once in a while. I'd have to go to the capital city. I lived about 3 hours away in a village.
Which direction?
I had to go to Kyiv, south.
Okay.
So I lived in a village right near the town of Cherkasy.
Okay.
It's like, if you look at a map of Ukraine, it's only like 30 miles away from the geographic center of Ukraine. So it's kind of near the river there. And so I would travel to the capital, to Kyiv, every once in a while for Peace Corps medical stuff or various things, and get to like see different rallies or protests or historical type things going on there too. So it was just a constant learning experience.
And a remarkable, just remarkable time. So for those of you who've just joined us, my guest is Paige Barrels, advocate, altruist, and former Peace Corps worker in Ukraine, fundraising for frontline units, among other parts of the war effort. And we've got lots of handles and links for people to see and hear about. So when I got to listen, it was a 3 month ago interview you did with Mr. Garrison. And he really brought to light what's going on, what it's like to be at the receiving end of the complications of the red tape of the from the American side. There's the official funding, and there's the donor side, and how they're equipping themselves, their own gear, and how it affects what it's like. I mean, you're the one disseminating this, but what it's like at the receiving end for them to be fighting this invasion when they're not sure what stuff's coming, and they only have themselves so many resources to buy their own gear. So talk about that, what it's like as a humanitarian aid provider, what it's like dealing with this red tape situation that we're all kind of a little bit, we're rather removed from all of that.
Yeah. So just to kind of, in a, Garrison, he's an American veteran who was over volunteer fighting in Ukraine.
And former Marine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a few friends that do that. He's like a colleague, more of a colleague, but I have some actual friends from back here in the States who are over there as well, who are volunteer fighting Army veterans. And then couple other contacts. I've met other people from other countries as well, Canada and New Zealand and so on, that are over there volunteer fighting. My biggest like connection to the front is, initially when I started fundraising, I was focused on like purely civilian aid, primarily displaced Ukrainians within Ukraine.
Millions and millions.
Yes. And I specifically focused on, because of just the context I had had, the hundreds of, I think we had 1,000 registered refugees in our village where I had lived. And so I worked with a team of the teachers that I taught within a school to help supply these, you know, people that were, that had to leave their homes with nothing, just the, you know, the share on their back. Mm-hmm. And we did everything from clothing to food to toiletries to we built a small community center. So they had like a, because a lot of them were living with other families and stuff, you know, they were kind of just, they didn't really have a lot of space. So we had this small community center with a fridge and tea kettles and all sorts of stuff that they could kind of go to and use as they needed. But then when I went over and went to the front line last year in 2023, at that point, a lot of the need for humanitarian aid for the IDPs, or internally displaced persons or peoples, it decreased. It wasn't, the need wasn't quite as strong. Some of them had either gone back home or had resettled or had left Ukraine altogether. So I, being at the front, saw the needs of the humanitarian needs of the soldiers. So that's where I kind of shifted my focus to, and that's primarily what I've been doing for the last little over a year. And so I've really gotten to see that, well, in some cases firsthand, that those delays and deal with that. And it's, you know, I've had people, sometimes people ask, well, why do you have to help? For example, if I do a fundraiser for medicine, why do you have to help? Like, why aren't they supplying that themselves? Well, the thing is that they are, but what you have to keep in mind is that their military is, one, significantly larger than it's ever been. You know, they're just the number of people. Two, logistics in war is, logistics when you're not in war is a challenge. Logistics when there is a war is really hard for a number of reasons. From the roads being, you know, you can't travel on the roads, to the danger of it, to having vehicles and so on.
And the railways,
people that will do it.
The rail lines are bombed and they have to be repaired. And so there's a constant reconstruction project underway. Just throwing that in there to the logistics.
Yeah.
What I've been taught on those spaces. Yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Paige.
So that's part of the problem. And then also, you know, I had one unit that suffered a lot, that had significant, very high numbers of soldiers injured, and the field hospitals were overwhelmed. And, you know, they sure, they can get these supplies through the military or through the government, but they don't have enough of them right away. We have to get them, you know, we have to get these guys these medications. And a lot of times it's not even, you know, necessarily like the type of things that they need in for surgery or anything, but it's like, some of these guys will have to go get stitches, get a little piece of shrapnel removed, get stitches, and go back out to the front within a day or two. Ugh. They need, you know, bandages and ointments and things, so they're not going to get an infection when they go back out, that type of stuff. So that's kind of part of that. I am fortunate. I know a lot of larger organizations, with some of the changes with the rules as far as bringing aid across the borders, larger organizations have had a harder time. Fortunately for me, because I work alongside a lot of nonprofit organizations, but because I work directly with primarily one Ukrainian charity organization.
Please mention. Yes, feel free.
Mm-hmm.
Which agent?
So I work with them. It's just a few people basically, and they started because they started helping people during the war, and so they did the same thing. They started working with refugees, and then as those, they're in the Dnipro area, mm-hmm. as the refugees moved elsewhere or settled, they shifted their focus also to the front, because they have a lot of friends and family members that are at the front as well.
Yes.
So because I work with them, I'm able to do a lot more as far as on the ground, whether I'm there or not, because I have teams and networks of people, both Americans or foreigners in general, and Ukrainians themselves. So I am a little bit advantaged in that point. And that's, I honestly, like, logistics is a big part of it, figuring out how to get, you know, I've got a friend that's heading over here in a month or so, and I'm going to be shipping her some supplies, some like tachmets, like tourniquets and chest seals and things. And she's going to bring those over, and then I'll help coordinate her getting some of those to some of my guys and some of her. So it's just, it's constant trying to figure out, and, you know, obviously the cheapest way to do it as well, because that's another thing, is shipping from this side of the world over is insanely expensive when we're talking large quantities of things or frequently. So it's a challenge, but we're figuring it out.
So, this is why we're talking about moms liberating Ukrainians, because it's you can hear this is a it's kind of cottage level, but it's really a geopolitical push and with a geopolitical headwinds to do all this. So and so I skipped over my own question, but how you're but you're explaining that how you're bringing others along with you, how you just when did you decide I've got to hop on this and I'm starting? Just we'll back up to that little threshold that you cross so people understand, you know, not to be intimidated about a project. People just start. So just talk about the step taking.
Yeah. So, I mean, we knew I was messaging with friends in Ukraine for a few months before February of 2022. They had been lining up, you know, equipment and everything along the border for quite a while. So we knew it was coming, just didn't know when exactly. We knew it was going to happen soon when they started adding mobile crematoriums to the lineup, because it obviously that's not just a flex. That means that there's an intention of coming over and people dying. Their own people, they bring those because when their own soldiers die, they don't want to have to bring them back. And they also don't want to have to report how many losses they've had. So they just burn their own people. But then they ran out of those, and so they just left them around in the streets. So the tanks technically started like rolling into Ukraine on the 22nd. And so that, for me, is for myself and a lot of Ukrainians anyway, is kind of the day that the war started, even though the 24th was really like the day that, you know, that we recognize as it. But I had posted something on the 24th about having sent over some money to one of my close friends. I just sent her like a couple $100 out of pocket because I was like, I don't know what to do. Here's some money in case you guys need to like pack up and leave. You know, I was panicked and afraid. And so, and then I started having people ask me like, how can I help? Where can I donate? What organizations? And I didn't have a good answer for that. And I know that I didn't want to just direct them to some, you know, for example, I'll say this, Red Cross has a pretty poor reputation over there. So I wouldn't want to direct people to them, for example. So I was like, okay, well, let me find out. I'll do some research. I'll ask around because I wanted to give a good answer.
Sure.
And in the meantime, a couple people commented on one of the posts like, well, hey, can I just give it to you and you can just send it over? You know where it should go. So I said, okay, yeah, sure. Okay, that's fine. Not thinking anything of it. So then I thought, I'll just put my Venmo on there and say like, hey, I had a couple people ask and blah, blah, blah. You know, if you want to help out, I'm trying to figure out these, you know, reputable charities or whatever.
Exactly.
And then next thing I know, I raised like $5,000. I was like, oh, so I kind of accidentally started fundraising, but I was just, then I had to get, you know, I was like, okay, this is serious. Now I have to make this. Yeah. So, I mean, I do some stuff. I am on the board of a nonprofit. I work with other nonprofits.
Just name them, Paige. Just name them. And I'll make sure those links are provided in the podcast summary.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm on the board of Stand With Ukraine KC. And then I also work with Ukraine Frontline and Renegade Relief Runners. And Ukraine Frontline and Renegade Relief Runners often have people on the ground. Renegade Relief Runners always has people on the ground. They have people that live in Ukraine now doing volunteering full-time. For Stand With Ukraine KC, I am the boots on the ground mostly. But I work with all of them and help because sometimes there's things that I know where to source or I know people that can help with something and I can kind of direct people. I don't have the time to do everything myself to organize it all, but I can at least get people in touch with each other. We're also members of the American Coalition for Ukraine, which is an advocacy group. It's made up of, I think there's over 100 organizations now, and so that's advocacy with like our government leaders, with Ukraine-related legislation. So just having all these networks of people has been really invaluable, and that's really how how this has all been possible is networking. And Twitter has been, that's one of the only good things I have to say about that app. But it definitely has helped with some of the networking and just, you know, getting in touch with new people and going to events and being over there, of course, helps as well. But that's how we've been able to be so successful as volunteers, is having these incredible networks of people, and we're all fighting the same war. So you know, it's if you can help my guys, I can help your guys. You know, it's at the end of the day, we got to get it done. So we figure it out.
So
anyway, why I just kind of accidentally is the answer.
No, not accidentally, intentionally, and on the fly. It's not accidental at all. And so I know, while listeners hear that you're dealing with, it's really a lot of minutiae. It's a lot of things that have to happen, and you want to be effective. And along with that, you're lobbying constantly for the foreign aid bills to be approved in the U.S. Congress. So do you want to talk? I mean, that's another thing that you've got going on. And it's a time for another wave of that support to be appropriated.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that was a very frustrating several months of...
it was a half a year.
I know. And I, we had some other legislation that the first time I went, I went to the Ukraine Action Summit, which is organized by ROSM for Ukraine and that American Coalition, now by the American Coalition for Ukraine. There's a lot of layover between a lot of these groups because a lot of us are involved.
Yes.
We have a lot of irons in the fire. I went in September of 2022. And then I have missed the ones in April. They've done them the past two Aprils because I've either been in Ukraine or preparing to go to Ukraine. But then I did go again last October, and then was there in D.C. again in February of this year for the two-year mark of the full-scale invasion for a rally in March. And, only dipped my toe into advocacy a little bit with the Peace Corps prior to this. I'd met with one of my senators, the offices of one of my senators here in Kansas before, but that was my first experience going to the Hill, to Capitol Hill, and doing it. It's very intimidating when you're first there, but...
Well, you're also
really
a federal
fun.
Employee, so that's complicated, right? What you can and can't do.
Oh, I'm not.
No, when you were, I thought you said as a Peace Corps worker that you're talking about lobbying then.
Sure, no, after.
You're talking
afterwards.
About as a civilian. Okay, so back to, so you're learning the ropes in the congressional corridors, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so like I said, it seems intimidating at first, but it's chaotic there. I'll say that. It's so busy and there's always people running around. But that's what they do. They literally just have meetings all the time. And everybody's just running from meeting to meeting, and it's fun. And especially when you are passionate about what you're talking about, and you know what you're talking about, you know, you go in there and I hate giving too much credit because some of our leaders don't listen to their constituents, but many of them do, and they do learn a lot from us. And I cannot stress the importance of contacting them and telling them what you, as their vote, as a voter, as their constituent, want them to do on your behalf, because it does work, as we've seen with that aid bill that we got passed after a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, mostly tears, but we did it. And we got some other legislation passed that has to do with the children Russia has kidnapped from Ukraine. And
well, what was that legislation? I'm less familiar with what that was. But I mean,
yeah,
I'm familiar with the kidnapping, and we're at a couple hundred thousand of children that are kidnapped in the hinterlands of Russia. But what's that legislative effort? I'm actually not aware of that exactly.
Yeah, so it was a resolution, and some people don't think that resolutions are a very big deal. However, when it was a resolution to acknowledge that Russia was kidnapping Ukrainian children.
Yes.
And the point of that is when we have, which was overwhelmingly passed, except for a small handful of people who are just, I don't know. I don't know. But that's a, you know, for the people that voted in favor of that legislation, if they're acknowledging that Russia is kidnapping children and relocating them to Russia, they're acknowledging that Russia is committing genocide, because that is one of the, like, five criteria of genocide with the UN Genocide Convention.
Yes.
So if they vote in favor of that, they are acknowledging that Russia is committing genocide in Ukraine, and therefore, with further advocacy efforts and further legislation, we can say, you voted, you acknowledge this. How can you then go and vote against further aid or other help or other things? You know, it's a tool, I guess, that we could use for advocacy, and then it's also, it's a step. And God, I mean, we got to start somewhere, you know, with the number of, I think only 400 kids have been returned, something just nothing, basically. I mean, of course, those 400 kids are important, and I'm really glad that they're back with their families, but we're talking hundreds of thousands, according to Russia.
Yes.
So, you know, that stuff, it does matter. And, gosh, and then there's another one that we are advocating for back in September of 2022, the Repo Act, which is the frozen Russian assets.
Yes, yes.
And that was actually, that was passed, that was lumped in with this last bill that we just got passed as
yes.
well. So that was in the works for quite a while as well. And and one of my friends is one of the main gals who wrote that legislation and was advocating for it to Congress, and works with some people over in Europe to push their leaders as well. So it's been really, really, I'm not into government or politics or anything like that, but I have learned a lot. So I unintentionally, I've learned a lot just by doing all this and just talking about it and having to know about it, because for Ukraine's sake.
Well, you have such clarity, and most of us do, about clearly this violation. It's a war crime. It's an act of one of the criteria for proving genocide. But a congressional member has an amazing capacity for compartmentalizing it. They could vote on that designation, but go back to, okay, well, we just need to take care of mm-hmm. other things before we give more aid to Ukraine or some sort of crafted message that says we're not there yet. We're not ready to part with the cash, or it's not the dividend we were looking for. So that compartmentalizing, it must it be infuriating to see that in an action. So,
yeah.
That's, now, we have NATO in town in D.C., so there's a lot of moving parts in that. So I don't know, is the American Coalition for Ukraine, are they must be there, and they have their quarterly meetings, I believe. I don't know. They must be there now, making the most of that.
I think so. I haven't been as in touch with that.
Yes, I understand.
I know that they announced the next Ukraine Action Summit, which is in September, I believe. So if anyone's interested in that, you just sign, you register, and you go. Like, anybody can do it.
And there's a big contingent in LA, I know, and that they mm-hmm. And so I try to keep, you know, checking back in with them about what they bring and what they want to bring here. And they'll be back on community radio, various members of that that group. So
yeah. So I'm sure that they are there. I mean, a lot of them live in D.C. So I know that some of them, some people at least were, and I imagine members of the coalition were out protesting, and I believe in front of the White House yesterday after
okay.
the bombings in the hospital.
Yes.
I'm actually planning a protest or rally here in Kansas City this Saturday because of the same thing. Because I'm mad. I'm angry, and I feel like we need to get together and yell about it.
And handle on Twitter is at Paige, P-A-I-G-E, at Paige in Kansas. And that's where I saw you're announcing the Kansas City rally on Saturday
mm-hmm.
in your 10:30 time. For those of you who've just joined us for this full hour, we have the real privilege of Paige Barrows. She's an advocate and altruist and former Peace Corps worker in Ukraine, fundraising for frontline units, among other parts of the war effort. There are many handles. I'm going to include those too in the podcast summary. So with the, I guess I want to talk about, I mean, this is it keeps happening. I mean, when we were in the same space. It was last night or late yesterday afternoon, and people are hanging on in this space. They're in UK, it's 2 and 4 a.m. their time, and they're all trying to, they're all hearing themselves repeat themselves. We said we needed to do this. This needs to happen. We said this was a terrorist act perpetrated on Ukraine. We've been saying this over and over and over again, and that's the definition of insanity, is saying the same thing, hope this time hoping, not expecting, but hoping for a different outcome. But that can really beat you up. With you're all about impact, not about the repetitive exercises that aren't making, you know, getting through. So I guess I'm going to talk about some pretty perverse sorts of things I want to swap with you, but more healthily, about your self-care. About what you do, because I know there were some calls for help out there where you were getting pretty raggedy, Paige, and, you know, you needed to regroup and repair. So how do you take care of Paige? Because you got to go back. You got to put that oxygen mask on so that you can go and send tourniquets and socks and MREs and other things to Ukraine. So how do you take care of Paige?
I don't. I've had to learn how to throughout this. With the mother, you know, this being focused on moms, helping the Ukrainian aid efforts. I have 2 young children, and so that's obviously my main priority. So trying to balance, you know, that momming, and then I also work full time, and then have this. It definitely, burnout comes easily and frequently. I definitely, when I come back from Ukraine, I always get a little bit extra sad. I think because part of it is, you know, after seeing that kind of stuff, you feel sad, and then just kind of, you know, when I'm there, I don't feel a lot of emotions because I'm, you know, we're so busy and we're focused and we're running around, but you're experiencing all these things. So then kind of processing it, I think once I'm back and kind of thinking about, a lot of it, it's a little tough, but I basically just kind of have to step back from, cause social media is also, it's a time suck and an emotional suck. it's draining. And so, but the thing for me is that's how I do a lot of my fundraising and advocacy. Yeah. So I have to do it, but I just have to be a little bit better about how much time I'm spending or how much time I'm, you know, how much I'm just limiting basically how much time I'm spending doing that and not responding to things that make me, you know, feel bad basically. But yeah, it's kind of just up and down and putting everything down, all the screens down, and just playing with my kids, or, you know, taking them to the pool or hanging out with them and talking to them and just cuddling and stuff. Just having those like real grounded moments with them helps, you know, because it just kind of, takes me away from that. And they need, you know, that they need that too. So obviously, so I make sure that I make time for that as well, because of course, like I said, they're my number one priority. So I have to make sure that I'm taking care of me for them in a way, I guess.
And you know that this has tremendous traction on them. With they're witnessing what your engagement is in this, your full on commitment, and they have on a level they can understand that there's impact in what you're doing too. And that's, I think, that one of my best ways of pitching activism to individuals is saying, you know, your kids are watching you. That's why you do that. And it gets them always like, that grounds them. Okay, I'll sign on. So there's, and I want to also mention to listeners, when we're in these spaces, and it was just as fresh as yesterday afternoon, our time, is these war, you know, tested veterans are sobbing when they look at the footage of what happened in Kyiv this week. So it's, yeah, there's a lot of sobbing going on. It's not just the tender of heart. It's, I mean, it's really quite remarkable. So I, and the other part of your self-care, before I get into some sordid swapping of encounters that we have with people from that part of the world, but how do you deal with civilians who are fatigued over here? They're, I mean, I'm looking at people saying, oh, I, you know, I'm on their way to their, I'm not going to implicate somebody's choice of sports, but if they're just saying, oh, I'm just so tired, I can't handle all this, and they have no idea what it's, what sustaining an invasion for 2.5 years must feel like. So how do you deal with them? Or you just say, I got to go somewhere else, compartmentalize that encounter, leave?
No, at this point, it's not even, like, the war fatigue, I feel like we're even past that. Like, a lot of people have just kind of forgotten, to be honest with you, because they're not seeing it. You know, if it's not, it's not on the news or not social media, it's hard. I can't post some, like, Facebook, for example, I can't post certain word, like the word Ukraine. If I post something that has the word Ukraine in it, it generally doesn't show up on anyone's feeds.
Really?
Yeah.
Zuckerberg's calling that? That's really?
I don't know if he's involved. It's Meta. Like, once Meta bought Facebook and Instagram, because I started with fundraising on those platforms. I wasn't even using Twitter, and I was getting great traction and tons of. Now, part of it, of course, I understand there's this low level of people caring and being more enthusiastic in the beginning. However, when Meta took over and the algorithms were tweaked, it was to the point where people that, like, close family and friends that, you know, you have the certain people on social media that always like everything you do. There are just those, like, and I had probably 15 or 20 people that no matter what I post, I could post a picture of a brick and they would like it. Right. Well, those people weren't seeing, like, I was getting zero interaction.
Really?
All of a sudden. Yeah.
Wow.
So I've had to learn some little tricks to get around some of that.
What is the hack to say Ukraine without saying Ukraine?
I write it with the English keyboard, and then I switch to the Ukrainian keyboard, and I replace the A and the I with the Ukrainian letters, and it doesn't recognize the word anymore.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. It's stuff like that. So visibility is still not worth. And when I say that, because a lot of people talk about, like, interaction on posts, actual engagement versus visibility. Well, engagement's one thing. If you have 1,000 people that are viewing your posts and only 3 people like it, then it's a problem with the post. But if you're only getting 150 people viewing this, well, that's, visibility is the issue, and it's figuring out, why isn't it showing up? Is it the image I use? Is it the text I use? You know, whatever it is. So I've had to really learn a lot about, yes, that, you know, social media, marketing, I guess.
AI hacking. Yeah.
So back to the fatigue thing, people aren't seeing it. They don't know about it. They just forget. And so when things like this, like this bombing of the children's hospital happen, I encourage people to, you may have heard me say this on that space last night, but to kind of take advantage of it, in that it's going to get probably some media coverage. So share that and talk about it. And, you know, I even on Facebook, I posted one of the pictures from it, and I paid to boost it. So it's like $10, and it's basically you pay for views. And okay, it's getting a lot of a lot more interaction than, okay, my other related posts. So to me, it's like, it sounds stupid that you have to do that, but I'm like, well, I want people to see this. It's important. And if they're not going to see it on the TV, they're not going to see it on Facebook because it's limited, whatever. Or my posts are limited because I post about war all the time. You know, I got to do. So, and it works. So I got to get, I just have to get creative as far as that goes to try to keep it in front of people. And that's the thing with the rallies and protests this weekend as well. You know, because not everybody watches the news or knows even I don't even know how much the news is covering the hospital. I sure as heck hope it is, but they are, but I don't know. So we just got to keep it out in front
keep
of people
it out
and
there. And
yeah,
I want now, listeners have heard me talk about when I hear Slavic spoken, you know the difference. I don't know the difference between Russian and Ukrainian. And so I find out and I yell out Slav Ukraini, and then I'll find out if it, you know, and they've heard the examples. You haven't heard the examples because this is the first time you and I are talking about this. And so mm-hmm. I want to talk about your encounters. There are so many Russians around here in Irvine, in University Hills, listeners that are immediate to the station. And so I, for a while, I was kind of low keying that greeting because, but I geared it back up. I'm walking to a one of the loveliest open spaces, the beaches in Orange County, and I wasn't sure, Paige, what I was hearing. I'm not trying to center this too long. It's a bit of a long off ramp here, but but I thought, I don't know. And I just, so I walked past them. I continued on. And in the other direction, I yelled, Slav Ukraini. And then I heard Herum Slava. And I turned around and there we had six Ukrainians on that path heading to Crystal Cove. And we talked about what we could talk about. And as I've explained to listeners before, it either gives a lifeline to Ukrainians that are beat up immensely about this invasion, or it lets Russians know that I know you're Russian and I'm not, and I want to know what, you know, they usually have nothing to say or they yell at me that I don't know my history. It's all that. But I want to know what you have in the way of encounters. That's not the last question. Last question will be your next trip and what your mission will be. But tell me, what do you do when you hear, cause you can tell if it's Russian or Ukraine. What do you do in those moments? You collide with people from that part of the world in the Kansas City area.
So I don't. That's the crazy thing. They're here.
Really?
I know they're here, but I don't run into them. I don't know if they stay away from me or what. But I know one Russian woman who came up and introduced herself to, and I met her several times. She came up and introduced herself to me at like a bake sale we were doing as a fundraiser, and said she was Russian, and you know, said, but she's a good person, so she understands what Russia's doing is wrong. I've heard some stories from other people. Recently, someone was telling me that his coworker is Russian, and I think it was a woman. She was saying that she agreed with what Russia was doing and that Russia was helping Ukrainians, which is just asinine. I don't run into him. It's weird because I know, like, we have there's a store here. It's a little shop. It's owned by a Ukrainian family. It's owned by a Ukrainian family. They do speak Russian. They were from the eastern part of the country, which is, that's common there. All Ukrainians can speak and understand Russian because,
sure, that's what,
know,
they learned. Zelensky's first language.
Russia forced them to,
yeah.
Right? Russia forced them to during the USSR. So I know that they sell, I've heard them in there, but like pre-war, and I've been in there since to send some packages out through me and to shop and stuff. But yeah, I just don't run into them. So, and it's kind of funny for the purposes of, you know, I'm kind of giggling about it, but at the same time, I also attend like all the events and all the rallies and things that if I'm not organizing them, I attend them usually. And it also says something about the lack of support from the Russian community. You know, when I was in D.C. this in February, there were two guys that had signs that said, I'm Russian, but I stand with Ukraine. And I know someone else was saying they talked to one other Russian woman there. But yeah, there is very little that I'm aware of, being as plugged in as I am, very little local support by the Russian community at all. That one woman is really the only one I know about. So, yeah.
Well, maybe you're attired in some things that give away that you're working hard on this, because I know you're talking about that yesterday in the space, too, is what people should wear and present and that kind of thing. And maybe they're avoiding you so that encounter doesn't even happen.
I do have a purse right now that says, I won't say it, the whole phrase, I'll edit it, but Russian warship,
Do yourself in.
Yes. It's in Ukrainian, but I'm sure they can figure it out.
No, we can't do that in any language. Yeah. No, okay. Right. Huh. So I'm sure there's more, and they show up. There was a film viewing in West Hollywood about the occupation, and there was a woman that was in the documentary, and she was there on the stage with the producer director, and a Russian woman trolled her right there. It was just really, it was obscene. And so they dealt with, yeah. So, and that was just a bit more on my side.
Really,
it's up. No. So tell us about your next trip, when you're going, what you want to do.
I don't know when I'm going yet. My full-time job kind of limits my time a little bit. That's a good question. I don't know when, and I don't know what, because it's hard to predict what the situation is going to be like. Even this last time I went, I didn't even buy my ticket till about 2 weeks before.
Oh,
because you know, I knew when I was like the time period I was going to leave, but you know, with the missiles this week, for example, I mean, things change so rapidly, and where our guys are that we support, where they're physically located, what's going on there, you know, it changes so quickly. So I can't plan out too far, but, you know, generally I go there and we run around and buy a bunch of stuff and bring it out to them. And, I document as much as I possibly can, because we do get to go, I go to some areas that are not visited by press or other volunteers.
Oh,
either they haven't been since 2022 or ever. So I try to document as much of that as I possibly can. I use that for social media, for fundraising, and for advocacy. I print those pictures off and bring them to meetings with representatives, and I lay them on the table in front of them so they have to look at it.
You cannot look away.
Yep.
Wow. Well, I know when people are in country, they don't have the time to do anything but just work with the boots on the ground, as it were. And I hope the military that may be streaming the show aren't going to be offended by my civilian use of any of these frames of reference. But you won't be able to check in with space and that kind of thing. We'll wait till you get back. But meanwhile, we'll be checking with you now while you're stateside with these. So I know it's time for you to return to your many, many jobs here. So I want to thank you so much for being on Ask a Leader today.
Thank you very much, Claudia.
Hold on. Don't go away yet. My guest was Paige Barrows, advocate, altruist, and former Peace Corps worker in Ukraine. And she is here. And I just want to thank you. Thank you so much, Paige, for not just your time, but your service.
Thank you.
You can follow her with the Twitter handle, as I said, at Paige in Kansas, and that's P-A-I-G-E. And I will put other handles in here. And I wanted to also give an update. Natasha Frolova, who was here as a crisis psychologist in Ukraine, in Dnipro, she had a fellowship here in Irvine, and she returned to Dnipro last month. She was away last week when Dnipro was attacked, and her father has been missing ever since. Her brothers and she have been looking everywhere for him, and about 3 days ago, she submitted a DNA sample so they could try to match with maybe someplace in the bombed-out area where her father's residence is. So that's my wrap. Next week, we need to talk about Project 2025 and make it real for you all. Along with us familiarizing ourselves with Project 2025, it's necessary to confirm our voter registration. Talk with you next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening.